This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. On Mondays this year, we've been featuring stories from the NPR 100, the most significant American music of the century just past. Today, The Wizard of Oz.
It is, of course, a great picture, but it wouldn't have worked without the songs, and those came from Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg, a couple of guys and a piano and imagination and energy. Their talents and a rich orchestral score from Herbert Stothert helped make The Wizard of Oz the most widely seen, best known, and best loved motion picture in history. Those particular superlatives come from John Fricke, who could be the world's biggest Wizard of Oz fan. John Fricke recalls the moment when his life was transformed. He was among the millions of Americans watching the first time the movie was on television. It was November of 1956.
I was 5 years old, almost six. And on that Saturday night, my two cousins said, "You have to watch this movie." And everybody had a good time, and all the kids were scared of the monkeys and the witch. And everybody walked away 2 hours later, having had this great, happy evening. I was the one who had the life-changing experience.
First, John Fricke found an Oz album, and then he read all the L. Frank Baum books. He joined the International Wizard of Oz Club when he was 11. Later came his own books on Oz, CD liner notes, documentaries. John Fricke explained for us that Oz was one of the first movie musicals to make the songs part of the narrative, essential to understanding the characters and their motivation. He also says to have a young Judy Garland playing Dorothy was a songwriter's dream.
The property, The Wizard of Oz, the script for The Wizard of Oz, the songs for The Wizard of Oz were all written specifically for Judy Garland. This was to be her first huge Technicolor showcase. And when Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg were signed to write The Wizard of Oz, they realized that there was a desire to have a ballad up front in The Wizard of Oz that would define Dorothy's character. And Arlen and Harburg realized they could write a ballad that had a great emotional range and great vocal range because Judy Garland, even at 15, 16, had that kind of power.
That you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me.
And when you look back on that scene now and listen to her sing that song, what do you think? They were right? Is this the real key point of the movie? And the thing that really makes it work and gets it going.
Well, it's funny, when Wizard of Oz was finished and taken out to be sneak previewed, one of the things they kept cutting out and putting back into the picture was the whole Over the Rainbow sequence. A lot of MGM executives thought, well, you can't have a ballad that early in the movie, it slows everything down, and why do we have to have a potential MGM star singing in something as distasteful as a barnyard? They were used to people singing in $30,000 nightclub scenes. But there was no way Oz could sustain itself without that song. That is Dorothy's theme musically. That is Dorothy's theme lyrically. I don't think you can overestimate the importance of that song and that performance in that spot in that movie.
If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why?
Let's take a song like If I Only Had a Brain. At the end of the day, when they wrote that or were working on it, do you think they knew they had a great and a memorable song there?
I don't think when they were writing what Harold Arlen referred to as the lemon drop songs, the lighter songs for the Wizard of Oz score, they were thinking in terms of the hit parade. I think they were thinking in terms of the character definition, in the case especially of If I Only Had a Heart, If I Only Had the Nerve, If I Only Had a Brain.
Why, tell you why, the ocean's near the shore. I could think of things I never thought before, and then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nuffin', my head all full of stuffin', my heart all full of pain. I would dance and be merry, life would be a ding-a-dairy if I only had a brain.
Well, indeed, after the movie came out, how was the music received, and did other people want to sing the songs, and did the sheet music sell well, and were they hit songs?
MGM put an actual ban on recording any Wizard of Oz music while the picture was being made. They wanted to kind of debut everything all at once, and about 6 weeks before the premiere, they had a special hour radio broadcast to debut the Wizard of Oz songs. Yip and Harold were on the telecast, Judy was there, Ray, Burt Lahr, Frank Morgan. And that was when the public first heard the Wizard of Oz songs. By the time the picture opened in August, Over the Rainbow was at the top of the hit parade, and the other Oz songs, Off to See the Wizard and If I Only Had a Brain, were also on and off the hit parade.
I'd be brave as a blizzard.
I'd be gentle as a lizard.
I'd be clever as a gizzard.
If the wizard is a wizard, who will serve?
Then I'm sure to get a brain,
a heart,
a home,
the knife.
Oh, we're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. We hear he is the whiz of a whiz, if ever a whiz there was. If ever, oh, ever a whiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one. Because of the wonderful things he does. We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Tell us about a song that, compared to the others, could be considered a novelty song. I'm curious about how Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead was recorded and how that was done.
Let the joyous news be spread, the wicked old witch at last is dead.
To record the Munchkin-like sounds, what MGM's sound engineer Doug Shearer did was invent a new mechanism that would slow down the recording process, and then he had professional singers sing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead at a slower tempo with a lot of enunciation and a lot of consonant, and then when he took the tape he'd recorded and played it back at the regular speed, you got the higher pitched Munchkinland sounding voices that have come to be so familiar.
And ring the bell, just ding dong, the merry old. Sing it high, sing it low, let them know the wicked witch is dead.
The Lullaby League, the Lullaby League, the Lullaby League, and in the name of the Lullaby League, we wish to welcome you to Munchkin Land.
There's a great moment where we found, actually, a demo recording of the whole six-minute Munchkin Land sequence that Harold and Yip sang, with Harold playing the piano. And there's just this sense of great joy taking the different character parts and hamming it up. And these are men who are extremely good at what they do. And they don't have false modesty about it. But instead of pride, they just have an awful lot of joy. At least that's how it seems to me.
The incidental music of this picture is something that I really hadn't thought about. I hadn't thought really about every major character having a theme and those themes being repeated and reprised as the picture goes on. Tell us how that worked.
The original plan for The Wizard of Oz was that it would have music from the beginning of the credits right straight through to the end title. They wanted every foot of film to have underscoring. And through this whole process, the various songs were used to reflect the characters themselves. Dorothy's theme is Always Over the Rainbow. The Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Lion have If I Only Had a Brain. Gulch's theme, as it's called in the conductor's score, became the Wicked Witch theme. One of the Oz arrangers said that they basically got that da-da-da-da-da-da by kind of warping the music for We're Off to See the Wizard. So da-da-da-da-da-da-da is a change, a slight variation on that. Billy Burke, the Good Witch, her music is actually the first six chords of the Oz overture, that da 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 da. And they use it very portentously in the overture, but when Billy Burke makes her entrance in Munchkinland, it's done very light and high on that kind of instrumentation. And this permeates the whole film.
This movie came out in 1939. Why do we still watch it? Why do we still love these songs?
Those Wizard of Oz songs were designed specifically to key into the emotions of anybody watching the film, anybody getting involved in the story and the characters. And because the story and the performances and the musical arranging and the photography and everything are so effective, they immediately have grabbed hold since 1939 of anybody watching that story. And even at that time, Dorothy was escaping from the cares of Kansas. The audience was escaping from the cares of their day-to-day life, the Depression, the threat of World War II. And as we've all come to realize, there isn't any moment in recorded time when there aren't things from which we'd all like to escape. And hopefully, in the process of escaping, you gain the courage and the heart and the intelligence with which to deal with the problems, and then you go back and face them. And I think that's very much part of the theme of The Wizard of Oz.
John Fricke, thank you for taking time to explain all this for us.
Sure, thank you.
John Fricke's most recent book is called 100 Years of Oz. To see all the selections from the NPR 100, go to our website at npr.org.